Hi, Bobby here. So a quick update before today's episode, which I'm so psyched for. I'm so delighted with this one. We did have a little bit of audio not being as perfect as we'd want because my guest regularly tours the world as a drag performer. You know, so the Wi-Fi isn't always the most reliable in a hotel room. Sometimes also things can happen like you getting locked out of your room. So I'm delighted that the interview happened given some of the behind the scenes. Anyway, a wonderful episode. Pete has done an incredible job on audio, but he wanted me to give a disclaimer about the audio. The main reason I'm jumping on with a voice note, though, is that for the first time in this podcast history, we are taking a little break. It's never happened before. You know, sometimes with the production of putting out a new episode every week, sometimes we do have to do re-releases. Things get caught up with guests or whatever else, but we've never really planned any time off. There's no season breaks in this show, and that is going to continue. But what I've decided is for December, we are going to be re-releasing favorite episodes from the past year. I'm going to be combing through myself to find the ones that I think are most exciting to re-listen to, or maybe you didn't catch them the first time around. Either way, that is the plan. And I'm going to record little voice notes like this one ahead of each episode as a little bit of a refresh. So rather than the kind of weird festive rush that often happens, we are going to be extra organized and get ahead on our January recordings and come back with a bang on the first Thursday of January. Thank you for all the ongoing support. Of course, these episodes will include the bit behind the paywall for our subscribers on Apple Podcasts. If you've not joined yet, you can now sign up for a free month if you want to give it a try and get a taster for what the extended ad-free episodes are like. For now, though, let's get into today's episode.
This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Temps, and each week with an inspiring guest, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. So, here we go.
This week, we're talking all about body image and so much more with such an exciting guest, who you may know from their multiple appearances on Drag Race or from the Emmy-winning reality show We're Here, which has a new season, season 3, coming out tomorrow. My guest is the wonderful Yurika O'Hara, and in this conversation, we really get into it. You know, as soon as we got into the bit behind the paywall, Yurika was telling me, well, you know, I've had all this media training. I know how to avoid questions or answer them in a way that I, you know, don't give too much away. And actually, I'm at a point where I feel comfortable to open up about certain things with the right people. And so it was a privilege to be able to have this conversation and to be able to explore further someone that, you know, many people know primarily through reality TV. And there can be a certain flattening that's created of people's personalities, whether that's to suit storylines or whether that's to do with the limitations of, you know, how many cast members you need to get the personality of across in however many episodes. And so this was a really exciting conversation that I so enjoyed. And side note, because we're mentioning Drag Race, you can imagine I'm delighted that Cheddar Gorgeous, friend of me, friend of the pod, previous guest, is doing so well in Drag Race UK. So if you're not already watching that, really fun season, and I think could be one to jump into if you're new and you've not consumed any of the behemoth, which is now the Drag Race franchise. So yeah, hashtag Team Cheddar all the way. I'll also link that episode in the description for this one if you're new to the pod and you want to go find that interview. For now, though, I don't think there's anything more I can say about this conversation. I think let's just get into it. But first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out. So a lot of people have been in touch with me since last week's ad, keen to understand why I say multivitamins, and when there's not the word multi, I say vitamins. And I'm here again this week to do another ad, but what I don't have is the answer. I speak this way. This was news to me as well. So there you have it. The world is confusing. I don't have all the answers. However, one thing that can be less confusing, wait for the segue, is choosing vitamins or vitamins, however you want to pronounce it, because we already make enough choices in a day. Sometimes I've had a hectic week and it can take me an embarrassing amount of time just to decide what to eat, let alone decisions that can have a more long-term impact on my health. This is a big reason why vitamins. See, I'm paranoid about it now. I can't swear in the ad. This is why a lot of the most popular options on the market just throw everything in there. Just have all the A's and C's that you might need and don't take into account your individual health, diet, lifestyle, or other important factors. Whereas the brand we're partnering with today, Vital, does take all that into account. So as one of our wonderful listeners, you can get a 2-week free trial of personalized vitamins that are created especially for you by heading to vital.com. And that is spelled V-I-T-L.com. C-O-M. And make sure to include the code mentalhealth at checkout for your free trial. This is a limited time offer. I already have mine on the way in the post. And if there's one thing I genuinely really believe in this time, getting gifts for yourself in the run-up for Christmas. I think, you know, not all self-care is about buying things, but if it can be a treat for yourself that comes in the post that you may forget about with buying all the other things and Black Friday and all the rest of it, it's fun to have something that's for you, particularly when it's to do with looking after your health, physical, mental, in this case, both. So there it is, vital.com, V-I-T-L.com. You complete a short online consultation to get personalized vitamins for you.
Hi, Bobby. It is so exciting to be on your podcast today. You know, I love the way that you allow the people that come on your podcast to talk about their platforms and just who they are as people. And obviously, me personally, like, a huge part of my platform is body positivity. You know, not necessarily by choice, but more by design. You know, I think growing up, it was probably like 5th grade when I started being like a foot taller than everyone else in my class. And, you know, I probably 3rd grade when I stopped fitting in the desk seats appropriately. And I had to have another desk set up that had a seat that wasn't connected to the desk, right? So that I could like sit comfortably in school. It was all of a sudden I started noticing my body was shaped differently than the other boys in the gym class when we were changing. You know, it's those early ages that we realized were different. And then I started to learn that I was taking up so much space in this world. You know, I think kids can be very evil sometimes when it comes to people being different, and especially being the fat kid. You know, I think they are definitely an immediate target. So you either, you know, there's something I always say, you know, when you're as different as someone like me, I feel like you have two options. There's either the option of trying to be invisible so that you're not the target, or there's the option of just being invincible. You have no option but to be stronger than everything else, because you can't skip out on being the target, which was very much the role I had to take, because not only was I like 6 foot tall by the time I was in middle school, I was also like 300 pounds and then also very flamboyant and feminine. So, you know, I was a target since I could remember. You know, it goes through your family, it goes through school, it goes through the way entertainment is laid out. You know, being bigger has always been the joke. You know, it's always been a negative connotation, you know, representing, you know, let's say undisciplined, you know, unhealthy, unphysical, I mean, unattractive. I think those are like the image descriptions that are naturally put on bigger people, no matter what age. You know, you become the joke or you become the attractive or the different or whatever. You know, it took me a long time to learn that I wasn't those things and that not everyone in the world viewed me that way either. You know, even though some did, it wasn't everyone, one. And then two, you know, as someone like myself being born in a world that's not built for someone my size, but then also being built in a society in East Tennessee in the middle of nowhere where it's not built for my attitude or my personality, I had to learn how to customize my existence to survive. Mm-hmm. I think that's where I could probably start my body positive journey. I think it goes very parallel with who I am as a queer individual as well, because I think it affected people could use the fact of me being bigger as the excuse to not admit their homophobia sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. When you were growing up, if you think back now, what was the body image like for those close to you, like your family or like close friends?
Well, I had a twin sister that was always like really skinny growing up. And so she was always the skinny one. I was always the bigger one. My older sister, you know, she sadly had an eating disorder just because she wanted to be so skinny growing up. You know, my mother was a big German woman, which was very empowering to me. She was my best friend growing up, really. I was also very traumatized by the abuse that I received from my father. So I didn't really have a lot of friends growing up, and I never really stayed the night anywhere because I was a bedwetter until I was like 13 from that trauma. And so my mother became my best friend, and she became this like symbol excellence to me, right? This kindness, this love, this unconditional love. My big mama, she was 6 foot tall herself, a German woman named Ulrika. That's actually where I get my name. But her name's Ulrika. So it's U-L-R-I-K-E. I just felt mine like the vacuum cleaner so that it'd be kind of funny for drag. I think that was my first icon to look up to was my mother. As like, she's a thick built woman. She's tall. She's strong. She's a single mom. You know, she left my dad when me and my twin sister were like 1 year old. So I never knew her not being, you know, a survivor and taking care of us on her own. Or she made me feel like the rock star son, you know, that I could be above everything else happening in life, you know? And that was perfect just what I was. In my husky jeans and all.
And it's so lovely to hear that you had that, you know, with everything else going on, you had that person to look up to. Because I think particularly when it comes to being a young queer boy, it can be difficult to find, okay, who are the role models? Where do I see myself in the world? And how do I cling to an idea of a future where things are better if I don't see that reflected back to me? And so often then you do see, okay, certain women or relatives or people that you see elements that you connect with. And that's something to latch onto.
Yeah, I definitely think that was my mom. Also my grandmother, you know, she's a big Irish woman. She was sure and big, with big old titties and freckles all over the place and longest red hair you could see. And she was just funny. And, you know, she was never afraid to be the butt of the joke just to make somebody laugh. And I think I definitely learned probably my sense of humor from her. Because when I wasn't with my mom, I was with my grandmother. You know, I was obsessed with her. So I had two amazing women in my life, to be honest. I think that's where my celebration of my femininity has also come from. And what really inspired actually a song that I'm releasing this year called Big Mom was inspired by both of them. And just that Big Mama spirit, that unconditional love that I received from them that I had to find in other people after they passed away, you know, and in myself, within myself, you know, where that unconditional love lives.
I love that. And so for you, what was that process like? Because what you're describing is in many ways like unrecognizable to the confidence that you just emanate now. So how did you manage to internalize those messages you saw in people that you looked up to and, you know, internalize that so successfully?
You know, that's a great question. I think that I found confidence through trial and error. Honestly, it was me going through and surviving the things that I survived in my life that helped me create confidence within myself. You know, you get to a point, I think, as a person of difference. And again, not only when you're a person of difference when it comes to your size or your familiar, your color, it can be a number of things where you just eventually decide, you know what I'm going to stop doing? I'm going to stop whipping my own ass. It's not just the bullies and it's not just the physical or the mental abuse that you receive when you're different. It's when you start allowing those thoughts and those opinions to become your opinions and that becomes the narrative within your own mind and you start having a battle within your own self is when the real trauma sinks in. It's when the real pain and the real mental issues start to process. You know, when you finally realize, you know what, I'm not going to be the people that hurt me, you know, because it truly becomes yourself that becomes the biggest bully. You know, and you have to start, for me anyway, I have to start retraining my brain. And that happens really like a little later in my life. You know, it happened a little bit of time as I came out and stuff, but I would say like my early 20s and then definitely, you know, making Drag Race and finding fame and going through the trauma of also finding infamy too with some people and their negative opinions online, and you know, learning to survive all these different opinions that I should have been used to. But when I saw those negative comments, they were comments I grew up with that I had already convinced myself were accurate. So to learn how to process it and survive it, it was just retraining my brain to think differently, to learn how to see myself in the positive light that I wanted other people to see me in. I think that's probably mostly it. And then also, like, you know, despite being a bigger person, despite people wanting to challenge me because I was bigger growing up, I was so anti-violence. I always have been. I've always been a lover. And I'm blessed because I think I got that from the love I received from my mother and my grandmother. So I have been much luckier than other people. Not everyone has had that in their lives, you know? I just had a father that didn't understand me and really the rest of the family, you know, and even my twin sister at a point in time because we went very separate routes in high school, you know? And so I think that's what saved me. And honestly, finding chosen family as an adult really saved me. Finding those people in the world aren't necessarily your mother, your grandmother, that have that same unconditional love, because that's what's made me survive it. It's not about me, like, you know, learning to be confident. It's about how I've created survival tactics within my own mind to save me from myself is what's crazy. You know, and it eventually becomes this fight with yourself more than the world. You know, you can blame it on the outside world all you want, but it's this internal struggle, and there's nothing harder in this world. The hardest thing in this world is that battle with yourself. That is the hardest fight any of us will ever.
Yeah, I totally agree. I relate to that a lot. And when I think about who you are now, the person I speak to today, I do see a lot of what you described there, the finding power and difference. And oftentimes we kind of need that reflected back to us. At times when we're not able to love ourselves enough, we're still, you know, very much in the weeds, like working on it and, you know, working on not hating ourselves versus before even getting to loving ourselves, then having that support network around you that can be a mirror to we do see something in you, I think is so powerful. Was there a moment like getting older, like finding fame, like the passing of your mother, where you realized the icons that you were seeking elsewhere, you could then be that for yourself?
Yeah, and I think honestly, you know, I grew up obsessed with movies and TV. And, you know, there was a few people that I was really obsessed with. Queen was someone I was obsessed with as far as females, and Monique, and big, powerful Black women. And it was mostly because they were big women, like my mom. You know, they reminded me of her and that confidence. And also, to be honest, Madea a little bit too. She reminded me so much of my mother. You know, my mother was a big German lady version of Madea's attitude with Queen Latifah's sexual confidence, I would say. And then I was really obsessed with Chris Farley growing up. You know, he's a plus-size comedian that passed away in the 90s. He's kind of like the first person I saw because he was big and he was blonde and he was funny that I felt like I saw reflected me besides the queerness. But he was so outrageous and loud and wanted to make people laugh. And I was very that growing up. You know, my survival tactic was be the excited, happy, funny guy. You know, gets you so far growing up. And then also, you know, my dad forced me to play sports and things like that. And even though it came with a lot of bullying at the same time, the funnier you are, the more straight guys like you. It's just how it is. You can be the gayest thing in the room, but as long as you're funny, you know, all of a sudden you're cool. But it was those comebacks where you make them funny to where people don't even want to fight with you anymore because they're just like, oh, that was good. And playing into that pink at each other, like heteronormative, toxic masculine culture too, learning to try to blend. Yeah. If I showed you pictures of like my senior pictures versus who I am today, you would be like, who is that person? You know, I was pretending to be as straight as I could possibly pretend to be, considering that I was a walking billboard for anything queer. And down to the puka shell necklace and the hemp braided necklace with jewel, you know, trying to be cool with the acrylic shrew hanging at the edge, you know, in my era anyway. So, you know, it's just, you go through those phases where it also creates this imposter syndrome within yourself. For me anyway, it's taken so many phases of my life to discover who I really am as a person, you know, trying to shed these layers of character that I created to survive, you know, and I think a lot of queer people struggle with that. I think honestly, also, that's why, you know, people want to ask like, oh, what gay pride? Why do you have to be so gay? Well, that's why, is because we had to pretend to be so straight for so long that we have no other option but that when we have the opportunity to just be gay, we want to be motherfucking faggots. You know, excuse my language, but, you know, it's our opportunity to celebrate every single moment that I pretended to be like you when I was completely different.
Yeah, I hear that. And it's great to see. And am I right in thinking with drag, there was, you know, pluses and minuses there, that it gave you the opportunity to explore your femininity and become your own kind of superhero, but then also your identity can sometimes get mixed in with, okay, what's me and what's the caricature entertainer persona that we've created?
I mean, you know, that is a loaded ass question, Bobby, because there are so many layers to what you're asked when it comes to drag and one, how it saved my life. I will say that. Like, if it wasn't for drag, I know I would not be where I am mentally or emotionally today. Intentionally not here, like standing here alive. You know, I can't say for sure, but I think that there's a huge percent of risk that my life could have taken a darker turn than some of the moments that I already had if I wouldn't have found drag and the family and that way to express myself and feel beautiful. You know, for me, what was so exhilarating and obsessive over drag is like, I dreamed of being a dancer as a little kid, not a truck driver or a sports player, you know, but as a 6'2", 6'3", even queer male plus size, that's not ideal for dancers, you know, let alone, you know, I wanted to be a ballerina. Mom, I didn't want to be Romeo. I wanted to be Juliet. And then also, I never knew what it felt like to be sexy or beautiful in my skin until I got drag. You know, and there's an empowerment to it where the hyper-femininity and the sexuality comes through and the compliments and the positivity that you receive from other people just by being in drag is something that I've never experienced before. So these were, and I had to say it, but I was drawn to the attention that I got by being in drag, but it was the positive attention. I'd never been told I was so gorgeous that many times in my life, not even by myself, not by anyone in my home life, you know. People don't talk like that to you.
Yeah.
So being celebrated like that, that's where drag took me to another level as a human being and as a confident being, you know.
For sure. And I can see, you know, it's beyond, I think, the attention. It's the affirmation. It's the encouragement of sides of yourself that you had felt the need to repress for so long.
Oh, for sure.
And yet then there can also be that thing of, okay, well, I'm so celebrated when I'm this persona and I'm wearing the drag and the makeup and the garments. But what about me behind that? Am I as valid outside of the drag?
I mean, there comes a struggle there too, where, you know, the identity crises that comes with being a drag queen are unparalleled, I think, to most things. Just because you are right, you know, you do get this amount of attention and love as a drag queen where, if you don't learn how to harness that power out of drag and help it filter into your everyday life, then it can consume you. But honestly, most of the time, drag teaches you how to harness that power naturally. Like once you feel that confident and you feel that way, and once you do more and more of it, it's harder not to create habits of that self-image of yourself. And it taught me how to feel that way out of drag, ultimately, in the end.
Yeah, and I can definitely see that, how you kind of hone certain skills like your comedy, but then in doing so, you were able to bring them into the rest of your life. You know, like, I know you're I'd say, well-respected within the drag scene for, like, how silly you can be, that you can, you know, take a role and you can really run with it. And a lot of the self-consciousness that some people may feel you've pushed past. And I see that working both within your drag persona, but then also yourself day to day. Is that right?
Yeah. The biggest thing was learning how to feel sexy as a bigger person, you know, especially in the queer community, because bigger women are sexualized, sometimes hypersexualized, you know, and I never felt that from men before, or at least I never noticed it, you know, like even though guys like growing up, like they could tell that I was gay, I never believed it was because they were attracted to me. I always had to make an excuse for it. Like, well, it's just because I'm the only other gay one, you know, because I was victimized a lot growing up. So I suffered a lot of sexual abuse and mental abuse by other older queer individuals that I just didn't know any better, you know, but because it was an attention that I was seeking and I didn't realize it was inappropriate, I let a lot of it happen. So, and I'm not trying to take ownership of where I should be a victim, but I also don't like to be a victim. I definitely see myself as a survivor. I also had to process through therapy and through my own personal journey, my responsibility in those moments as someone seeking that validation and that understanding of who I was and stuff. But
see, I want to pause on that because I think there's something really key there about drawing that important distinction between there are reasons why you can find yourself in certain situations and they don't make you necessarily the perpetrator, but there are still things to examining yourself. So yes, a lot of the things that you went through were horrific and they weren't your fault, but also there can be ways in which we kind of re-traumatize ourselves and we can be a part of breaking those patterns.
Well, the craziest thing is that sometimes when those things happen to me in the moment, it felt right because it was lust and desire. And it wasn't until after or later in life that I realized I was taking advantage of. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's a real thing with queer individuals. Like when you're a kid, you don't understand that the adult that is helping fulfill these, you know, desires and things. And then it becomes self-guilt thing, like you did something wrong. You know, but in the end, as you get older and learn, then you realize you were taken advantage of and it just causes even more trauma, you know? And then it's like, how did you allow that to happen to yourself without remembering that, like, in this world, there are adults and there are children and there are roles that are played by society and there are rules that are naturally built there for people's safety and for children's safety. So, you know, I think that was a heavy, heavy trauma I had to really get through to be able to handle my queerness and to be able to truly believe I was sexy. There's something about sexual betrayal that just makes you feel unattractive, you know, especially when you're bigger and you're already like stigmatizedly like unattractive or like stereotypically unattractive. So then on top of that, it's like, oh, well, I was an easy target because I was the fat one, or I was an easy target because, you know, they knew they could get away with it because I was the sexually unattractive one.
Yeah.
But that's not the case, obviously. They got hard. That's what I told them, you know, to get to the nuts and bolts of it, LOL, that's entry statement. You know, that wasn't the case, but that's where your mind goes. That's how you process it.
Mm-hmm. It's so tough because you've got that big societal narrative of attention is good. You should be having people attracted to you. And then at the same time, you're living in a very fat phobic society. So those two conversations are very normalized. And at the meeting in the middle, then if you do get attention, what kind of attention is healthy or unhealthy is less talked about, particularly when it's, you know, the victims are underage. That's such a taboo topic. And yet one that we so need to talk about. Otherwise, people can be in the position of, oh, well, I've been taught that I absolutely need attention and also that I don't deserve it. So maybe this is what I get. These are these scraps for me.
So exactly. I mean, you have a very clear idea of what you're saying, which is really nice to hear because it's nice to hear it in those words because it's just transparent in my mind to hear it that way. But you're right. I mean, that is very much what's happening.
Yeah. And these days, do you really believe that it wasn't your fault?
Yeah, you know, what I learned now is that some of it was fine. You know, I think that's what I had to admit, is that some of it I did enjoy and that was okay, because the part that was wrong wasn't my doing. You know, the part of some of those situations wasn't wrong on my behalf. I was a child. Okay. You know, I was abused. I couldn't put myself in a victim place of tormenting myself, which is the hardest part. There's this fragment of feeling like I learned a little bit about myself sexually through those experiences, which I really felt guilty about for a long time, because learning that it was me being taken advantage of and learning that it was inappropriate and, you know, the age difference and so on, and the person and the this and the that really puts into perspective, like, that's a whole nother can of trauma. That's when you become like the whipping post, they say, or the doormat, or the one being used to manipulate.
Yeah.
And then there comes these trust issues with the world, and especially sexually and emotionally as you get older, when it comes to relationships, having sexual or romantic relationships, you know, and it caused for a very long time for me to not be able to have successful and meaningful sexual relationships. The only type of sexual interaction I knew was traumatic, which was putting myself back in those traumatic positions, weirdly, in these situations that seem normal to me, but were actually very toxic, right? And
yeah,
it was outgrowing, learning that wasn't who I was, not really what I wanted. It just happened to be a handful of first-time experiences. I think that a lot of queer people especially, and then of course, obviously being bigger, trying to understand your sexuality, trying to understand that you can be sexy at the same time, is already so, it's just so, what am I trying to say? I feel like it's
complex.
Complex, it's separated from reality. It's like it doesn't exist, right?
And that can often be
a lot.
Yeah, that can often be a part of the trauma as well, the ways we dissociate. And that's something that I talk about a lot that you've described, where we can seek familiar trauma. We can end up in patterns that are harmful for us, but there's a bias towards that familiarity. And we think, I can handle this, versus should I be in this situation in the first place? And I know in terms of your mental health, you know, running alongside the body image, working through the trauma of the abuse, could you share a little bit, just as we start to wrap up, about your kind of journey with sobriety and some of the nuance there of being in an environment where escapism is very common?
Yeah, you know, escapism, a lot of times really is the only way sometimes to escape that self-inflicted and the other inflicted traumas from other people, other things in your life, you know. And a lot of it is, and I say self-inflicted because it's all internal now. You know, as queer adults grow up, it becomes internal trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes self-inflicted all of a sudden. You know, because those people that did it to you aren't sitting at home having to numb themselves because they did it necessarily, as much as we are that are left with the actual trauma of events or the trauma of those emotions, those feelings. So we are self-inflicting this trauma still on ourselves, and learning how to let those go, which is why escapism is such a thing in the queer community. And, you know, this last year when my grandmother passed away, it was like that final straw that broke the camel's back for me. And when I say straw, I mean, I picked up the straw that broke the camel's back and started snorting everything I could, drinking everything I could, popping any pill I could at a cert party, anything that made me feel, one, like I belong, and two, like I was nowhere near where I was physically out. You know, it was how do I escape the reality of my life that, you know, for me, Big Mama comes to mind again, because I have my mother tattooed on my right arm. I have my grandmother tattooed on my left arm, because I will always have these women by my side, because I did growing up. And I lost my mom in 2018. And I lost my grandmother in 2021. And losing my grandmother, it was that was the moment where I cracked, you know, and the surface opened up and I went in that crack deep and I went hard and it was no longer fun. It was me trying to destroy myself emotionally or numb myself out. I don't know. I don't think it was suicidal, not intentionally suicidal, but it got scary to a point where I was using and abusing to scary levels where it was careless and suicidal. And not suicidal necessarily because that wasn't my intention.
Yeah.
But the carelessness was nervousing.
But so, I think there is something there actually to highlight in terms of, you know, you were seeking oblivion by the sound of it. And I think oftentimes that can be left out of the conversation, that suicidality doesn't only exist in, I have this plan and I have this intention. It can also be, I don't want to be here anymore. I don't know how to survive what I'm going through. I wish there was another way out.
What a powerful thing to say. I don't know how to survive what I'm going through right now. It's so, that is such a powerful thing to say, Robin, because that's the truth. It's like, what, I cannot make it through this moment is what you think in your mind. So you just try to numb it out and go to another planet. You know, you start talking to demigods and aliens at some point.
Yeah.
Because you're so inebriated. And it is a dark place, but it also, you know, I learned so much from it, I have to admit. And then number two, what saved my life was me getting to a point, and I hope no one ever has to go through this, but for me personally, it was getting to the deepest place I could get, whether it was drugs, alcohol, or whatever, to where I was almost going to lose it all. I was almost, maybe my life, maybe it was my mind, maybe it was my paranoia, I don't know. But it was that tiny taste of wanting to still live that I found within myself that really blossomed me into this sober journey, one. But two, the person that I am right now is 100% a different person than I was just a year ago.
Yeah.
You know, I sat here today and I'm 8 months sober. And, you know, I'm my version of sober. Sobriety is everyone else's own version. You know, I do have some anxiety and depression medication that I take because I, again, went through so much extensive trauma that my anxiety is at a place where it's unmanageable without something. But I'm no longer self-medicated. You know, I'm going through therapy and I'm getting the help that I need to live. I'm no longer surviving. You know what I mean? I'm living. And that's where I appreciate weirdly now every moment, every dark moment that I had. And now I'm able to thank those moments because I have an understanding that a lot of people don't have. I'm able to connect with people on a level that most people can't because I've been through so much, but also I'm able to open up and be vulnerable because I'm not afraid to. You know, and that's relatable. And people are able to open up back to you now.
Yeah, I mean, I relate to that hugely. And it is really tough to get to that place, but it is such a power when you can connect and you can look somebody in the eye and see where they're at and acknowledge it and feel brave enough to kind of sit in the emotions. You know, I think particularly when you're raised as male, there can be such an encouraging to push down your emotions that then that comes off on other people. That you then want to kind of slap down anyone else showing emotion. And that's part of like toxic masculinity policing itself. But as you know, as we wrap up, this is something, you know, you are such a wonderful person. I can see how much you've grown and how much this influences your work. You know, shows like We're Here, where you connect with strangers so deeply and make, in so many cases, a life-changing moment in their life. You know, I don't know how you would have done that a few years ago. So would you mind sharing a bit about the upcoming series of We're Here? Obviously, you've mentioned you've got Big Mama, your new single. I got to see the video before anyone else. I'm delighted. It's so good.
Yeah, you know, this season, the third season on HBO with myself, Bob the Drag Queen, and Shangela, and, you know, we go into some really intense political and deep conversations this season that we haven't shared before, I am able to express more of who I am as a clear-headed individual that we also go through as a family together with my sisters that people aren't going to be, I don't think, ready for, but I think they are ready to see the realness and the reality of what we're bringing to the stage and the educational reality. You know, the thing about reality television and docuseries is that reality TV is a completely different monster than docuseries television. Docuseries is where documenting real life situations. And so everything that you're watching and seeing people go through authentically 100%, there's no production to it. The fact that we put on a drag show at the end and we turn it the fuck out and we use drag to personify the message or the goal that we have for the people that we're working with. And you're going to see a whole new Eureka this season, I'm going to be honest, because I'm just a new person. You're not only going to see a new Eureka, you're going to see a new Bob, a new Shangela, because it's a new type of season where I think we've, you know, the last couple of seasons have been amazing, but through these two, we've realized who we are, what our goals are with this show. And I think what resonates the most and where we could impact and put our energies in certain places to make it an even more incredible and impactful show. Season three is going to serve the children, honey. It's really going to be amazing. And I'm excited to see it myself.
Yeah.
You know? So, and I was there, but
I love that.
I'm excited to see it come together. Thank you for asking.
No, of course. And so their new season comes out on the 25th of November. Do you know when your new single drops?
So we are doing a preview release party in West Hollywood at Heart WeHo on November 19th. And then we will be officially releasing the song on the 20th, and the video will release on December 6th.
Nice. Love it.
Officially.
So. Loads to look forward to. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Bobby, so much. It's been such a pleasure to talk with you, honestly.
We will wrap up there, but I could talk to you all day. You're such a delight.
I know you are too. What a treat. Thank you. And letting me share just some of my personal stories. You're very interesting to talk to.
I'm so glad.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.